Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two best friends and TV writers try to solve all of the world's problems, assuming that we all agree that the world is a stand-in for me. I am one half of this podcast, comedy writer, author of books, aspiring magician, and guy who responded to the first girl who kissed him with thank you, Daniel O'Brien, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I hope your breakfast is going well. I'm a comedy writer as well. I have a family. I didn't really plan for this one here, Dan, because I'm a little thrown by something you said.
Wait, we can dig into that in one second. I just have to backpedal a bit. I love that you said, I hope your breakfast is going well.
Well, because you said good morning.
I hope you're I know the morning part of it, but like, no one checks in with someone eating breakfast and is like, oh, I hope this is going well. Because it's usually just like, yes, I'm eating breakfast, like standard breakfast.
Yeah,
and they were like, it was at the start, and then things really went off the rails. I poured syrup into my coffee, and now I don't know what to do.
I was anticipating like a big breakfast, like that they know the podcast is coming out that day. Mm-hmm. They wake up early. They put together a big breakfast. One of those breakfasts you would see in the sugar cereal commercials where like,
yeah, yeah. And like your boss is coming over for breakfast. Your boss and his wife is coming over for breakfast.
Yeah.
So it really needs to go well. It's one of those situations.
And it's going, I'm hoping it goes well. That's all. I'm wishing them well. Now I've forgotten it. Say your thing again.
I gave you a lot. Podcast where two best friends and TV writers try to solve all the world's problems, assuming that we all agree that the world is a stand-in for me.
Loved it.
I'm one half of this podcast, comedy writer, author of books, aspiring magician.
Yes.
And got
stop.
Oh, that was the one.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop. You have a way of putting on a new hat occasionally and deciding that mm-hmm. that's your new life course. I'm just curious, is magicianhood one of them?
Close-up hand magic is certainly a thing that I think about all the time.
Yes.
Like,
good.
Completely by myself.
Oh, I hoped
just
it would
like,
be this.
Like, I don't practice card magic or anything like that too often, but the sadder thing that I'll do instead is, like, use my imagination and pretend I'm very good at it. So, like, I will just, like, move my hands and then, like, imagine that I had a thing in my hand and, like, wouldn't that be impressive if I could do it? I've seen people do it. Wouldn't it be cool if I did it? It's all in support of making my nieces and nephews believe in magic more.
Yeah.
Like that's my entire goal is like I want to be able to pull candy bars out of nothingness and pull cards out of nothingness and keep the spirit of impossibility alive in the world for as long as I can.
That's a noble cause. I thought that you were doing it because you were like, I bet people would like me if I could do magic.
No.
Yeah, I was getting very excited, just like gearing up my inner bully.
Right. If I was like, man, 3 years into this job at Last Week Tonight, I don't really feel like I'm fitting in, but like we don't have a magician. So maybe that's the role I'm going to fill. Folks, we love doing this show, and we get a lot of support to do this show if you listen to it and download it and tell your friends to listen to it and download it. But we also get to keep doing this show because of our wonderful, wonderful sponsors. And today we are talking about Tushy. Thanks to Hello Tushy for supporting Quick Question. Hello Tushy is a sleek bidet attachment that clips onto your toilet and sprays your butt clean with fresh water. And it's the best thing you can do for your butt. And it starts at just $79. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ. Get 10% off your order.
Thanks to MyBookie for supporting Quick Question. Winning season returns to MyBookie. Winning season means Survivor, Super Contests, and Squares. Invest in your intuition. Use promo code QQ and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. I used to be, obviously, I think every comedian, for some reason, when they were very young, thought I would want to be a magician.
Correct.
And I can remember going to parties with my mom where they're like work parties or whatever. Somewhere I was going to be bored was going to be meet a bunch of adults. And I would bring a quarter so that I could practice my quarter tricks in my hands and like mm-hmm. just get used to the feeling of like having that quarter in my hand so I always knew where it was and like, and I could move it around. And at the time, it was very similar to what I just proposed, which was like, maybe this is the thing that makes me popular or like makes people like me.
Which is weird because like if you acquire a bunch of close-up hand magic skills, that will backfire as an icebreaker. If you're trying to make friends in a new group of people and you start doing tricks, I don't think people will like you for that. They'll be like, why did this guy bring a card to the a deck of cards to the bar? Right. I don't understand. But I've had you at house parties back when I lived in Los Angeles, and I've always had decks of cards around. And when you're like mostly comfortable with this group of people, you would pull out cards and do tricks. And it's very cool. It's very appealing. It's people who already like you, and now they like you more. And it's like, oh, this is like, Soren is now entertaining us. So like, you have to continue doing the same indoor pursuits of studying magic, but also have the social grace to know when to deploy it, which is near impossible.
It's tough. And I'll tell you, as a kid, it didn't always work out for me. There were times where I was very much like someone sitting on a park bench and I was like, I'm going to make the world better for them. And I go do something. And then they're like, oh, okay. Thanks, I guess.
All right. Do you want money or something? Do I owe you money for this now? No? All right.
I sensed early on. I had a bunch of different magic books and things that I was like, this means something to me. I'm going to be good at this. And very quickly learned, oh, this isn't cool. I got to stop doing this.
I was on the same vein because I was a little bit into magic but didn't pursue it because it seemed hard. And now that I'm an adult, I'm pursuing it more. But along the same vein as a kid, I got into ventriloquism. Like, I got a ventriloquist dummy. Did you do that?
No.
Oh, man, that's good. It sounds like you lost your virginity before I did. But I, like was super into the idea of having a ventriloquist dummy and getting good at it. And I never got good at it because it is also very hard. But I just, like, had this fucking dummy that I would practice with in the mirror. And this is early 90s. I couldn't just YouTube ventriloquism, as I imagine people can do now. And, like, again, 90s, ventriloquism just wasn't as sexy as it is today. So I didn't have a ton of icons to look up to. Jeff Dunham wasn't around yet. I just had like one episode of Doug where they had ventriloquist dummies, and that was my model. And like, having no mentors or no way to get better at this, I eventually abandoned it. But I was still just like sitting in, there's nothing stranger to me than, I mean, like, it's very hopeful. I have a lot of love for my young, stupid self that I thought, even if I have no teachers, even if I have no books giving me the very basics of ventriloquism, I bet I could figure it out if I just sit alone with this dummy for a while. And I'd be like, all right, I use this string. That works the mouth. All right. I can make that open and close. That must be half the battle. Now,
that's the hard part.
Now for the rest of it.
I think, yeah, you mentioned that on a podcast before of how freeing it is to have it, the idea of watching a set with somebody who has a dummy on who's rude and obnoxious, and you get to do all that. You get to do all that insult comedy when it's not really you, and like, you get to be removed from it. I understand the appeal of that as a kid, but still, I think even when I was young, I understood that a dummy was not cool.
Yeah. I can't, again, I've given lots of shout outs to my parents for indulging in all of my stupidest hobbies, and like, God bless them. The year that I put on my Christmas list, ventriloquist dummy, nothing else. And they indulged that. They made that happen.
It's good parents.
Like, and like, it's great parents. And they know that there's a rough road ahead of me for that. But if they're it's still just like, let's give him what he wants and let him find out on his own.
Yeah,
because why this is wrong.
Yeah, it's not for us to tell him it's not going to work.
Yeah. And like, who knows? Maybe he'll be one of those famous ventriloquist guys. Like,
Well, he's a pioneer in the field then. And who knows? Yeah. Maybe he'll make it sexy. He'll do like the punk rock ventriloquism.
Yeah. This will be the next Howdy Doody. I'm not even sure I'm old enough to understand that reference.
Yeah,
I thought you were gonna stop me at the next part of my intro, which was a guy who responded to the first girl who kissed him with "thank you."
No, that tracks.
Okay,
absolutely tracks. That makes perfect sense to me.
That tracks, but magician doesn't track.
Well, current magician. I was getting very. I was like just like cracking my knuckles and like moving my head around to my shoulders, getting real ready.
Colleen, hold my calls.
I gotta just destroy this boy.
Well, should we move on to the show? Are we done with the intro?
Yeah, let's do the show.
Okay. This is when we normally check in with quarantine updates. I don't think I have any. I think, sadly and broadly, I've just been getting more comfortable as New York is getting more comfortable.
Yeah.
But I know it's only a matter of time before things get worse.
Right. It's going to be, yeah, as soon as you have a cold snap at all, you're all fucked. Yeah. And not in the same way that like everyone's going to get COVID immediately. Everyone's going to think they have COVID and suddenly your hospitals will be packed because everybody's got the flu or they've got a cold. Anything that people get this flu season, they're going to immediately assume it's COVID.
Yeah, the doctor's office that I go to here in New York sent an email to, I guess, every patient they've ever had that was like, just letting you all know, it's cold and flu and allergy season, so here's what allergies look like. Just reminding you that this might not be COVID. You've lived through this before. Just chill. If you sneeze, please don't ask for a COVID test. Because they're prepping for a bombardment of people.
Right. Yeah. It's well, so now that I've been tested, that could be my COVID update actually. I'll tell you what it's like to get tested. It's crazy. So you're basically
I've been tested. What's crazy about what you did? Yeah.
We're in a car culture. It's a drive-in hospital.
Oh. Did you go to Dodger Stadium or somewhere else?
Somewhere else. Okay. I went to UCLA. Their baseball stadium, for whatever reason, has a great big parking lot. And it's near it's like the Veterans Hospital puts it on. But it's all these cones, it's all these cars driving through in big zigzags. You get through a certain area and then you get to these tents. And it really does feel like a pandemic because it's a bunch of people in big suits and it's these pop-up tents everywhere, like E.T. almost, but without the accordion tunnels going between them. Mm-hmm. And they hand you a bag with these clamps, you know, like you pick trash up off the ground with. Yeah. They give you a bag with those, and then you go through to a new section, and you roll down your window a little, and they explain the directions. They shout the directions to you from 10 feet away. You do the swab in your mouth, and then put it all back in, do exactly what they say, and then you go throw all this in a trash bin. It feels like a ride at Universal Studios or something because you're just moving from one section to the other where someone gives you the narrative of like what happens next.
Sure. The movement part feels like a ride.
That ride where you at Universal Studios where you take a swab and you tickle the top of your mouth.
Right. Remember when Jaws from 6 feet away shouts at you?
It's not a good ride, but like most of the ones at Universal aren't.
My experience was, how quick was the turnaround for the results for yours?
24 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's a difference. Mine, I did they jam the Q-tip up your nose and into your brain and, they remove the part of you that remembers how to drive. And then they take that to a lab somewhere and you get your results. And I got mine in like 8 days.
Oh, that's way too long.
But it was just, you sit there and they jam a Q-tip up your nose.
Yeah, so I watched that in Hard Knocks, which you are at least familiar with.
The football show, yeah.
Yeah, it's not on TV. It's on your thing. and it's, what they do is all those guys get tested every single day. They have to sit in a chair and they get tested. And these are football players who are, you know, at this day and age, when you're a football player, you know the consequences of being a football player. Like, you are getting beaten the fuck up out there, and it has lasting consequences on your body, and you're willing to do that. But these guys are such cowards getting their tests. Like, they are very, very nervous. And every time somebody comes at them with a swab, they go, whoa, 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 whoa. Just give me a, let me just get ready. And you watch them emotionally and mentally prepare to have a cotton swab in their nose. Every single one of them.
Man. It was, I feel like people are going to think I'm some, very specific form of pervert if I say this, but it was pleasant. I didn't mind it because maybe it's because I heard so many stories of people who were like, this was awful. They jammed it so far up and they swirled it around and I hated it. And it felt very like I'm not prone to jamming Q-tips or cotton swabs up my nose, generally speaking. And DOBs, devotees of this podcast will be happy to know that I've since learned to blow my nose like a human successfully. Whoa. And that's what I normally do.
COVID update.
But this sensation of like a cotton swab getting jammed up there and like clearing a path through a thing that rarely has a path cleared to it, and then coming right out, there's like a release to it that is very pleasant, in the same way that I imagine getting like a huge amount of wax pulled from your ear is pleasant. Things that I know from knowing you that you would enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about it right now.
Yeah. Just like the doctor jammed a cotton swab up my right nostril and she was like, that's it, all done. And we're like, oh, come back. You're gonna leave the left hanging like that? Come on.
Do both
sides.
Give
me some balance.
Feel so up. Yeah, you walk out of there with your head kind of to one side, you weight it down.
Hey, listen up. You use water to clean your body, right? Time to do that to your butt. That's what we're talking about today. It's butt cleaning. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ and you can get 10% off of your Hello Tushy bidet. It attaches right to your toilet and it cleans your butt. It's hard to believe in this country, most of us wipe instead of wash. For years, bidets have been available, but hideously expensive. They cost thousands of dollars. The Hello Tushy Modern Bidet Attachment is here to democratize the blessings bestowed by bidets and offer clean buttholes, not just for the top 1%, but to everyone. Hello Tushy cleans your butt with a precise stream of fresh water for just, I can't believe I'm saying this, $79. It attaches to your existing toilet, requires no electricity or additional plumbing, and cuts toilet paper use by 80%. So the Hello Tushy essentially pays for itself in just a few months. Because with Hello Tushy, you don't wipe at all. Even the best two-ply just can't cut it when it comes to hands-free poop experience. Ditch paper products and uncomfortable chafing when you switch to the soothing, cleansing stream of water from a Hello Tushy bidet attachment. Also, every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and 12-month warranty. That's a year warranty, buddy! Join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. I was skeptical about bidets at first, but then I started using Hello Tushy and now I am never going back. It was super easy to install. I love it so much, and it has changed the way that I think about, I'm going to say it, buttholes. Do you look forward to pooping with your Hello Tushy? Because I do. Let me ask you something. Would you clean dirty, crusty dishes with dry paper? Of course not. You would use some soothing, wonderful water to clean those crusty dishes. And I'm asking you to mentally apply that same thought process to your butthole. Also, I don't want to get too political here, but toilet paper and wet wipes are ruining the environment. Do you know the average person uses 57 sheets of toilet paper a day? I use double that, or I used to anyway before this, and that every roll of toilet paper requires 37 gallons of water to be made? A bidet only uses, on average, a pint of water. Stop wiping and start washing. One of the reasons that I resisted a bidet for so long is because I assumed that it required a lot of money and plumbers and electricians to come in and completely redo my whole toilet and bathroom, but that's not true. It doesn't need to cost $1 zillion to upgrade your bathroom and give you the opportunity to poop in luxury. Hello Tushy only costs $79 and changes your life. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ to get 10% off. This is a special offer just for our listeners. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ for 10% off. hellotushy.com/QQ. Your butthole will thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, Dan, speaking of Hard Knocks, I have a question for you.
Okay. Is it about...
it's a quick one.
Is it about me returning the football? Because I'll do it. I will.
No, you keep it.
Eli Manning is gone. They need someone stupid and bad at throwing footballs to carry them.
By
and
the
I'll
way.
Do it.
It might you might have that already in Daniel Jones. You should really come back just to watch him. It's pretty fun. I mean, he can throw some darts, but he's got the same like Eli curse where he just doesn't want to be there. Anyway, what I'm actually talking about is that Daniel O'Brien, too humble to admit it himself, has won his second Emmy.
Yes. All right.
Congratulations, Dan. That's really huge, man.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm happy to admit that it filled the hole.
It's finally there. You finally filled it all up.
It's good. The first one didn't, but now this one was like, good. I'm fulfilled now.
That's
I did
great.
It.
Now I want to hear what it was like not because now you've been to real Emmys and you've been to COVID Emmys.
Yes.
And I want to hear the differences.
There are certainly pros and cons of both. The obvious pros of going to the real Emmys, I got to fly myself and my mother first class. Got to stay in a nice hotel that was populated with the cast of Game of Thrones and other HBO stars. There were lots of fancy parties full of fancy people with nice free drinks and nice food. We were in a big-ass theater. And I got to stand on a stage with a tuxedo and hold an award. And it all felt very surreal. And all of those parts, all of the things that you think of when you see the event are true and were felt. The things that you didn't see, the cons of this is like, it's super hot. You get up early to like shower and get dressed and... then just sort of sit around and wait for your cars to take you. And then you walk in, like the red carpet is very long and it's very hot. And no matter what you did to get yourself ready, it doesn't matter because you're sweating fucking bullets and you're just trying to get in to this ceremony where you hope there's air conditioning. And you're there from like 2 PM until, I don't know, what felt like 8:00 at night. So you just have to like eat quickly at home because you know you're not going to eat for another 6 hours. And you're spending at the ceremony itself, you're spending a lot of money on like concession stand drinks if you want to drink. And there's a lot of sitting around. You just sit quietly during the commercials. It's very weird and uncomfortable. And... So on the flip side, with like the COVID version of that I truly loved was I was gonna watch the Emmys from my apartment, and I showered 20 minutes before my friend Kay, my coworker Kay, was coming over to watch them with me. I showered 20 minutes before, put on a short sleeve shirt and shorts, and could use my own bathroom whenever I wanted. Which was like honestly a huge plus for me.
Were there honestly sleeves on that shirt?
There were sleeves on that shirt.
Okay, all right.
It's fall in New York, Soren.
I just don't think I've ever seen you in a short sleeve shirt.
It's the it's the difference of being in like a full tux and being nervous all day in a new area, and like if you're me, stress farting. Somebody help me in Morse code. Versus being in my apartment where I feel very comfortable and I can just like spend the day relaxing and then watch it. Obviously the cons of that are clear. I didn't hang out with any famous people, and I didn't get to fly first class or treat my mom or any other date to a fun Hollywood experience. The other weird thing is, like, we were Zooming the ceremony with pals, and we hadn't figured out a way to, like, have a 9-person grid Zoom and also share one screen that was just the Emmy ceremony.
Oh.
So by the time our, like, we were, like, bullshitting and chatting, and then by the time the category that we were looking out for came up, we had to mute my TV because now I'm listening to the audio of the ceremony from 9 different Zoom accounts through different computers, and, like, everyone's internet connection is different. So, like, some are lagging. So you're just hearing 9 different, like, delays of the same thing, and I'm trying to magically focus my ears to be like, which is the most current one? Because I don't know. It's all chaos right now. And you're just waiting for someone to say, if you're hoping to win, you're waiting for someone to say Last Week Tonight. But because right. there's a delay, you hear Last Week Tonight as named as a nominee like 8 times. And I'm like, is that it? No, it's not. It's not. Okay. All right. All right. And you're just like staring at a screen. At that point for me, I was like, I'm going to wait till someone else reacts, because I can't focus on the sound. I don't really know what's going on. So, like, let me see if one of my coworkers smiles. It's like, okay, good. Yeah, he smiled. All right. That means us. That's good.
Oh, what a weird way to experience it.
It was very weird. And like, it's...
Were you nervous all that day at all?
I was nervous all the day. And that takes me to, like, the main thing that I wanted to say about the Emmys. And I think I said some version of this before for the WGA Awards. And I know it's going to sound like performative humility or whatever, but it's the whole thing feels very strange, and I don't love the whole idea of awards for work that we're doing. And, like, I'm not gonna pretend that it's not exciting, or that recognition isn't nice, or that it doesn't feel cool, or that my parents being proud of me isn't a good feeling. But I know, and I know that losing wouldn't diminish the work that we did or the feeling of pride that we took in it. And if I buy that, which I do, then I also have to buy that winning wouldn't enhance the work that we do or mean that it was better. I go into this knowing that the work that we did is good, and the work all the other people in our category did is also good, and none of that would change in a night. I know this. I worked very hard to get myself in a mental place where I accepted that. And yet, I woke up so stressed out of my mind. I woke up like 2 hours before my alarm. So like 5:30 in the morning, I'm just up vibrating with stress. And I was thinking about it all day. And like knowing that I keep telling myself that it doesn't matter. It's a strange, probably unhealthy mantra that was repeating in my head, which was, I don't need to win, but I really don't want to lose, which sucks. And there's like an anxiety that you can't intellectualize away about that, because like I truly do believe that I don't need to win this award and we don't need to win this award. But it's also, again, like losing never feels good.
No.
Like, period. And when I think about how much stress I'm under on a day that is supposed to be exciting, I just think, why am I doing this? And also, like, why are any of us doing this? Why we all got into, everyone in our category, we all got into this to, like, write jokes and make people laugh and do a thing, and then once a year there's this other thing that is like, now we're gonna pick who's best. And like, I don't think it picks who's best. I think there's 1,000 reasons that people win, and it's a very strange thing. And I recognize that how it sounds coming from my position, because what I'm essentially saying is, like, now that I have 2 Emmys, we should stop having Emmys. Let's stop doing it. Which, you know, I don't totally agree with, but like, if I had my druthers, which I don't, I would be like, let's just stop submitting ourselves for the Emmys, honestly, because it's such a needless stress inducing thing. Like, we don't need to do this. And like, I would rather us just not be eligible, or me personally just not be eligible, than to have a day where I think about, first I think about how sad I'm going to be if I lose, and then I think about how sad the people who lost are if I win. Which is like that again sounds like performative humility, but it's true, because I can see people in our category who are dejected after it, and it's like, you're talented, you're good, you shouldn't, this shouldn't be a bad night for you. I hate that we have to do this. Does that all sound insane?
No.
Is that a wrong answer to how was the Emmys?
Sort of, yeah. Well, so I think that your perspective on it is probably a very healthy one. But I think you're also ignoring that there are individual moments that you experience in your life sometimes that are going to open a bunch of doors for you going forward or close a bunch of doors for you going forward. Mm-hmm. And you can be aware of them in the moment that's actually happening. And that's very rare, because usually you only see them afterward. And this is one of those ones where if you're an Emmy Award winner, that's a very different thing on your resume than Emmy nominee.
Yeah.
And so even if it doesn't matter to you, it matters in the grand scheme of like professionally what other people think of you. And it shouldn't, but it does. And sure. So it's when each time that you win an Emmy, it's just money in the bank. Like that's a very crass way of putting it, but it's, you're guaranteeing your job further and further each time this happens. Shows that win Emmys rarely get canceled. Even if they do get canceled, you're now an Emmy Award winner that can move on to another show. Like, this is just polish on your career in a way that I think very few people get to experience. And that's great for you, because you shouldn't just feel lucky. You earned it. And I'm proud of you, Dan.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I recognize that, all those things, but it's tough to reconcile that with like the romantic writer at heart that has decided awards don't necessarily mean that I am good at this.
Yeah,
I guess like career wise, certainly there's no question that doors are open career wise because of Emmys. But like, you're not allowed to say, if I lose, I'm still a good writer and my work is still good. You're not allowed to say that in the same breath as saying, if I win, it means I'm better. Like those two things are irreconcilable to me.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, it never feels bad to be recognized. And it's like, somebody you don't want to date is attracted to you, you're flattered by that. You're not going to be like, no, you shouldn't be.
What do you mean? Who is she? Who says I don't want to date her? What's her deal? Does she want kids? Does she want 5 kids?
I don't know, man. I'll ask her.
All right.
She's in my Twitter feed trying to get a hold of you. I think that, yeah, and like winning, it doesn't matter if you earn a win. Winning in general feels good. Just that's like an, what is it? A priori?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
An a priori thing. Like that, yeah, a priori. Like that's just inherent in us, is that like being named the best, whether or not you think you deserve it or whether or not you think other people do or whether it's going to hurt somebody else, still feels really good in that
certainly.
Fucking moment.
There's no question
you don't have to feel bad for that.
That I was happier that they said the name of our show than if they'd said the name of a different show.
Right.
That objectively felt great. And we were like, yay. You know? You know how things feel great every once in a while? Remember when things felt great?
I do.
This was one of those times.
And then you got to just like sit there for the rest of the show knowing you won another Emmy.
Yeah.
And now you're going to get to get one. Somebody's going to mail it to you.
Yeah, if the postal service is still a thing, then we will eventually get Emmys.
Did you get this time around, did the Emmy send stuff to people's houses, or is that too complicated? They used to send stuff to your hotel room.
Yeah, so HBO sends stuff. I don't know if I'm allowed to say what HBO sends, but HBO sends stuff to the nominees as like, congratulations for your nomination. And the Academy sends stuff to the nominees as well. Like our peer group, people who are in our category who are nominated, got together with the governors of our peer group, and the governors decided things to send us. So we've got a couple of care packages sent to us, which was nice and thoughtful.
What I'm really looking for is, did they give you any fondant this time?
No.
Fuck.
I know.
That was my favorite part last time.
Yeah.
Because I got to eat all your fondant.
Right. We walked into my mom and I checked into our hotel room for the Emmys last year, and I don't even know if it was the hotel or HBO or the Academy or fucking what, but someone had spelled out Emmys in delicious fondant. And Soren ate it.
You can't take it with you, man. You gave it to somebody who needed it more than you did. It's also like just hearing the things that they do for you, like that all these different groups, because there's the pageantry that goes along with it. And you don't get a lot of that same pageantry, obviously, because this pomp and circumstance is gone with everyone getting together for it. But yeah, you're still getting some of that. And all that feels really good. The same way that I've worked at companies before that I didn't like, I didn't care about, the job. Mm-hmm. But occasionally at the Christmas party, somebody would put together a video montage of the things that had happened that year and the people who worked in the office, and like little clips of them celebrating certain things. And you're watching it and you can't help but be like, yes, I'm a part of something. I'm a part of something good. Somebody took the time to make this,
yeah,
to show all these things that we've been working for. And just being acknowledged for the work that you do just feels so good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the money is for.
Yeah, but also the awards, man. You can have your cake and eat it. You can have your fondant and eat it too. Anyway, congratulations, Dan.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't want it to be so much of a downer. Like, I don't want to seem too cool for school about scoffing at the Emmys. It feels really incredible. It's hard for me to divorce the idea of winning with the idea of the people who lost, who I don't think are...
Boo, fuck them.
I don't think they're worse than us.
Boo.
I don't think they worked less hard.
Should have tried harder.
Oh, God almighty.
No, man, you deserve it. Don't worry about them.
Okay.
You just revel in this for a little while. You're allowed to do that.
All right.
There's no shame
Hold
in
on.
That.
Give me 8 seconds of silent reveling.
Okay.
All right, well, I'm hard as hell. What's next?
You have any questions for me?
I do. I think it's a leading question because I already might know your answer, and I'll lead you to it. Any, like, jokes or bits that you've written and had for a while that don't have a home yet, but you know you want to use it somewhere, and I know one of yours is about traveling to Newark. It was something that you had written, like, show agnostic, article agnostic. It didn't have a home anywhere. It was just like a beat in a thing that you knew at some point, I want to write this exchange of dialogue into something.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah. Well, I mean, I assume every comedy writer has these, by the way. It's just like a notebook filled with these moments that you'd like to put in something, but you don't know what they belong in yet.
Right. Like, I feel like when people talk about comedy writer notebooks, they have, like, they assume it's like jotted down ideas. Like, what if a hamster was president? Or what if what if flowers could scream? But most of the comedy writers I know do have those things, but also just like, person A says this, person B says that, person A says punchline.
Yeah, it was for me, that one that you're thinking of was a man standing at a kiosk at an airport asking for a flight to Newark, and the woman says, the person working behind the counter says, for business or pleasure.
Wow. And the woman actually was a doctor, and it was the guy's mother, and that's why you didn't know what was going on. You fool. You sexist fool.
The woman, let's just say she's a woman, for business or pleasure. Oh, no. So the guy says he's buying a ticket to Newark. She says, for business or pleasure. And he says, it's Newark. And that was just like a thing in my head where I was like, Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to go somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never put that in anything. And then I started to like, the other thing with these things is that they feel a little like snowflakes where you catch something and it's very pretty in the moment that you see it. And you're like, yes, this belongs somewhere. And if you don't use it right then, it melts and you don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
Like it loses that beauty to it pretty quick for you. And then you hate it.
Right.
But yeah, that was one that I had. Do you have some?
I have some. I have a thing that I've been thinking about for a while that I don't, it's like, it's an exchange of dialogue that is so specific that I couldn't like drop in anywhere, but it's two guys in some situation where a pastor is speaking. These are two guys who are not familiar with religion at all. And a pastor is doing like a very stereotypical lead into a story about Jesus where it's like, I want to tell you about a man who had some pretty radical ideas and people thought he was wild and people thought he was pretty cutting edge. And you know, like you've seen this before, that like a youth pastor who's sitting backwards on a chair.
Yeah.
Talking about Jesus in a surprisingly cool way. And as the two guys are listening to them, one of them is insistent that he's talking about the Matrix. And the other guy is like, no, it's not. Like, it's like, I knew a guy one time. This is going to be about the Matrix. No, it's not going to be about the Matrix. He had some pretty radical ideas. $10,000 on Matrix. And he had a pretty wild name. This is definitely Matrix. And his name, it's going to be John Matrix, was Jesus. And the guy's like, ah, shit. And the guy was like, do you think the lead character of Matrix was named John Matrix? And the guy says, I don't know what I think. And that's it. That's the entire exchange that I have. Yeah. I like the idea of the guy being wrong. I liked him thinking the Matrix lead character was John Matrix. And I liked him being offended at the idea that someone would ask him what he thought. Like he didn't want to be, he didn't want to be held responsible for his thoughts and was mad about that.
I think that's great.
But
let's
find a
home for it.
Where the fuck am I going to put it?
I don't know yet. We're going to workshop this, Dan.
Okay.
I'm going to find a spot for it.
All right. Like right now or some other time?
No, some other time.
Okay, cool.
I'm just trying to think of some other ones that I have. Because I used to write them all down, and now I just have them as a thought, or like I try and fit them into a tweet, and then I'm like, and then I'm done with it. I don't ever have to think about it again. I really like the idea around buying a house. You deal a lot with like your credit and everything, and the idea of a couple that rekindles their relationship by destroying their credit together, like how dangerous that is. Like they love the idea of living that dangerously. And the danger is it becomes very sexual to them. Like that's how they have to have sex is like mm-hmm. by ruining their own credit scores. And so they're doing things online or going places I guess going places wouldn't really work. See, I haven't workshopped this yet,
yeah,
Dan.
That's fine.
But just a couple who that's all they get off on is like their FICO score, checking their FICO score and seeing it's gone down 15 points and being like, oh, that's going to be so hard to fix. That's so bad. That's so bad. and that's love.
Do you still get ideas for sketches?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do, but not the same way. It's like my brain doesn't work the same way anymore.
Yeah. I feel like my brain shuts down when I start to think about sketches because like sketch doesn't exist anymore.
It really doesn't. I mean, I think you should leave feels like it could be a revival.
Yeah.
But a sketch in general, internet sketch, I mean, sketch
right.
that I would be capable of doing,
right.
it's gone. It's over.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. My brain doesn't really work that way anymore. I occasionally I'll think of something and be like, oh, that would be interesting. I wonder how I can make that into an episode.
Right.
Like stretch that little silly idea into an entire
yeah.
episode.
Got a silly idea about kangaroos. I wonder if I can somehow turn that into an 18-minute Last Week Tonight piece about how there's not enough regulation and oversight in octopus farming.
Yeah. I want somebody to describe a woman as like, she's a 40-year-old divorcee from Tempe who dissects owl pellets on her YouTube channel. Like, there are very specific people I want. And I know already, like, I'm like, yeah, everybody knows who that is.
Yeah.
But I can't pull the trigger. I don't know where it goes. Winning season returns to my bookie. That's news because it's football season. That's exciting. Daniel, I put some bets down on these last Sunday. You want to hear how it went?
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, I didn't do so well, but that's my own fault because I thought I was going to do some crazy science with it. And I thought for sure, Washington will lose. For sure, the Jaguars will lose. And I'm a dummy. I shouldn't be betting because I don't know what I'm doing. But if you do, then trust your intuition. Winning season means Survivor, Super Contests, and Squares. That's why MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. Here's the thing. There are games that are going to be on that, frankly, are not that exciting. There's going to be sometimes, you know, the Jets are going to play Miami, and you just have to live through that. But if you want to make the game more exciting, bet on it. At MyBookie, winning season means hitting on all your parlays and props with your feet up, watching your team or, you know, Miami. It's time to celebrate. It's the NFL season. It's back. Invest in your intuition. Use promo code QQ and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet on. From live betting to championship futures, every play you want to make is waiting at MyBookie. And it's simple. You just make your picks, you win, you collect your cash. Use promo code QQ and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today at MyBookie. Up to $1,000 first deposit bonus. Double your first deposit. Use promo code QQ to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code QQ, bet, win, and get paid.
Well, that question didn't get as much traction as I was hoping. No, it was a bad question. Do you have anything for me?
Yeah, I'll ask you a question. Right. Daniel, quick question.
Go.
What was a job that you had that you hated, but now later in life you realized how, like, it gave you the most valuable tools you could have professionally or, like, in the rest of your life? That's sort of a complicated question, but what I mean by that is a job or an aspect of a job where at the time you're like, fuck this. This is so pointless. This is not what I want to be doing. I hate this. And then every other job you ever had after that, you were like, oh, thank God I did that. That all of that grinding really helped to get to make this so much easier for me. I'll go first if you want.
No. I want to start by saying that, like, I don't have a great answer for that because this is going to sound silly, but I've, like, truly enjoyed every job that I've ever had. I think because I was in a rush.
Keep winning awards for all.
I know.
Of course you enjoy them.
That's what it's all about. I was in such a rush to grow up when I was younger. Like, I was very excited about having part-time jobs, all jobs. It's all I wanted to do was, like, I want to be of legal age to work according to the New Jersey state government and then do it. So I started working at 15 at a movie theater doing the least glamorous part of working at a movie theater, shoveling popcorn at the concession stand and just being, like, stinky and covered in butter all the time. But I loved it. I was so excited to be doing that work. And that continued to every part-time and full-time job I'd had since then. I'm just, like, I guess a born worker, and there's no way around it. But to answer your question about a skill that I acquired that has been useful in not only this job, but in most of my life and, like, socialization. I worked at Sports Authority for a number of years. I started out in the fishing and camping department, which I was not qualified to do at the time and was not super invested in it. And it was just like, those are the vests that you want. Those are the fishing poles. Do you want to ski? I'm also in charge of that department. Those are the skiing things. Hey, I'm 16. There's no way I understand what I'm talking about, but I can point to where things are. And then from there, I was transferred to the footwear department. And the major change from fishing and camping to footwear at Sports Authority in the early 2000s was that in footwear, you worked on commission. Any shoes that you sold, you put your sticker on if you sold them, and then that sticker got scanned, and then you got a certain amount of money from that. So it's the difference between working minimum wage in New Jersey at movie theater and starting at Sports Authority, which is anywhere between $5.15 and like $6.25 an hour, till you're making commission, which could sometimes end up being $13 to $18 an hour if you were good at it. And I wanted that money. So I, even if I wasn't like the most knowledgeable person about shoes, I learned sales techniques. I learned how to sell people on things. And in as palatable, stomachable, as in a not skeevy way as possible, just like charm a person and disarm them as much as you can and make them like you enough to want to buy these shoes.
It's the art of the deal, man.
Absolutely. Oh my God, a mentor for sure. I would never do it in a way that felt like I was scamming someone. Like I'm never gonna grab someone and be like, you're looking at that shoe? Fuck that. You want this piece of shit shoe that is super expensive because my commission is more.
You want these Skechers shape ups because, right, I get more for them.
Kim Kardashian says you're gonna lose 90 pounds if you buy these shoes and eat these lollipops.
Has Joe Montana lied to you before? Right. Buy these big weird scoliosis moon boots.
But I would like do some research into the shoes and try to connect with the people and genuinely entertain and sell them on things. And I was very good at it and made money doing it. And even though I hadn't had a sales job since then, I took those lessons of like any salesman, any car salesman will do. Well, they will find something. They'll ask you questions until they find some way to connect with you and bond with you in some way that makes you like them. And I've applied that to every job I've had since then, and a lot of like interpersonal relationships that I've had since then. I'm just like, I early on had a couple of years learning how to figure out what a person wants and give it to them, even if I'm the one who's deciding what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't, these things you didn't realize you were cutting your teeth,
yeah,
at the time. I think that's a good one.
It's helped me. It's made me, I don't want to say good, but decent in any job interview I've ever had. I haven't had many, but like once you do something in like direct sales, it seeps into your brain. Like you see it everywhere after that. You see everything as some version of sales because you're always selling yourself or selling something or selling an idea. Is that too?
No,
am I like nihilist Don Draper?
No, I think that's like a super valuable thing. In fact, mine's like a close cousin of that, which is that I for a while thought I wanted to be an actor and went on a lot of auditions. And so I was not working a job that was actually a career. I was working a job that would let me go audition so that I could try, like, it was like scratching lottery tickets. Mm-hmm. Like I was going to get rich this other way if I just get the right one. And I would go on these auditions and they'd be like, for, let's say it was for Pizza Hut. I'd have to drive 2 hours to an audition. I'd wait in a room with a bunch of guys that looked exactly like me. Mm-hmm. They'd bring in three of us at a time. One of us would be a disembodied head and another one would put it on the table. And then that one on the head, the little head on the table goes, Pizza Hut, it's for me, or whatever the fuck mm-hmm. it was. And that was it. And at the time I was like, I don't think I want this. I don't think I want to be an actor. I hate this. I hate doing all of this. I hate when you go in for real roles, like you go in for the lead in something, the things that they would ask you to do, like you're ready to jump on board with whatever they want because you just want them to pick you. And I learned during those, there's like a moment where you just chat with them at the beginning. Before an audition starts, you walk in the room, they ask you how it's going, whatever. And how many people fuck that part up? Mm-hmm. How many people, that first impression of like trying to talk to somebody and you come off as like way too strong, way too aggressive, too try-hardy, like it's so easy to just mess that part up where you first meet somebody. And I used to mess it up all the time. And then I started to get better at it and better at it and better at it. And you just sort of like learn these tools that you keep in your arsenal that then you can use on any interview you ever go on, anytime you meet somebody new, that are so invaluable that I was like, oh, I was really learning an actual skill here when I thought I was just wasting my time. But there's something you have to do to not only like separate yourself from the group in the first 30 seconds of meeting somebody, but also separate yourself in such a way that they remember you fondly, mm-hmm. as opposed to like, yeah, that guy just came in juggling or doing close-up magic. Yeah. It was very strange.
Like kind of sexy though, right? What else can he do with his hands, you know? That's what they're wondering.
If he can make a card disappear, what else can he make disappear? I don't even know what that
means.
Yeah,
okay, all right, good. I'm glad you know.
I hated it. I didn't like doing it, and I would drive 2 hours back to a job that I didn't particularly like. And so I was like, what the fuck am I doing during this time? And what I realized was like every interview I ever went on that, I think I came across better than anybody else. Like that's it sounds arrogant to say, but it's like it wasn't necessarily me. It wasn't like me being like genuine, like this is what you're gonna get. It was me being the version of like, this is gonna be memorable enough that you'll be like, oh, I like that guy.
Yeah.
And you could do that throughout your entire life. I mean, nobody, if you're not totally the same person you were when you met somebody for the first time, it doesn't matter. We're so forgiving of that. As long as there's somebody who feels genuine and charming and that make their memorable to you, then like nothing else really matters.
Yeah.
And that's what I learned along the way. Yeah.
I learned another thing. This wasn't from a job, but it informed my management style. And I'm still not a good manager, but this was one of the only things that I was somewhat decent at as a manager. And it came from, if the close-up magic stuff didn't get these women fucking sliding out of their chairs, then this is going to do it. In my a cappella group in college, right when I...
Just give everyone a second to climb back into their chairs. Maybe clean up a
little. Dry off, ladies. the president and founder of my a cappella group, like right after I joined it, he messaged me on AOL Instant Messenger. If our audience doesn't know what that is, fuck you. But he reached out to me and just asked me a couple of questions, like, not about myself, but just like, hey, I was thinking about, like, maybe trying to do a Guster song for our a cappella group. What do you think of these songs? And, like, Guster was a band that I knew and loved, and I was just like, yeah, I mean, I like these songs. They're great. Guster, like, has built-in... There's always great harmony in any Guster song. And this is early Guster, so they weren't using a full drum kit yet, obviously. And so I was just pointing out, I was like, obviously. It's cool, but like for vocal percussion, it's going to be weird because they just use bongos. And I don't know exactly the best way to translate that into vocal percussion, which is just like me fumbling with something to say because someone who was a senior in college to me as a sophomore and B like a head honcho at this a cappella group. I was just like, I want to say something to say something. And he was like, yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you for pointing that out. That's good. And like, that was the extent of the conversation. And it mattered so much to me that as I was starting out in this group, someone important was talking to me and asking my opinion and listening to me. And like, nothing came of it, but it was still just like, this made me instantly like bound to life to this guy and to this a cappella outfit. And that's a thing that I tried to bring into management once I was in charge of people at Cracked, was like, if there's a new person, find a private time to reach out to them and talk to them and make them feel heard and make them feel special. And like, it's not completely performative, but it's a little performative. It's right. Just like you can hook someone early if you know that you are coming into something with a position of power and authority, and you meet someone as a peer when they're new. it goes a long way to instilling loyalty or like, man, there's no weird, there's no non-weird thing to say. Devotion, affection, what's?
Yeah,
fealty.
That,
but it's good. And like, I actually like followed up with him a couple of years later. The guy, Dave, who was running the a cappella group is now a successful businessman, obviously. And I told him this specific thing. I was like, hey, when you reached out to me and asked my opinion of this Guster song a week into my time in this a cappella group, it really made me feel more engaged and more a part of this group. It's good. And he was like, yeah, no, I know. I did that on purpose. That's like, that's business. That's I do that with everyone. And now you have that tool.
Yeah, but man, if you catch somebody else doing that, if somebody does it for you and then you catch them doing it for somebody else that's genuinely like their idea sucks or whatever, it's just devastating. You can really fuck somebody up though. You have to be very careful with that power. But you're absolutely right. You were a pretty good manager. I'm just thinking back if you ever did that to me. That is not something I genuinely did with people. I was never like...
I think you I did. Didn't,
I think I did it when people had generally had good ideas and we had really good people working at the site. So I was like, yes, that I like. But I can remember being in meetings where we'd be kind of like a soft pitch meeting where people would be like talking about stuff and somebody would suggest something and I'd go... No, that doesn't work. And at my new job, I've learned, don't fucking do that. Don't ever do that to somebody. But I was young and dumb. You were a good manager, though. I think you did a great job.
Thanks, man. I think things went really well until everyone got fired under my watch, but who's to say?
Well, first video got shuttered, and then everyone got fired. They moved you, and then all those people got fired.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You shouldn't have been a manager anyway. None of us should have been.
No.
We shouldn't have been responsible for other human beings.
Never want to do it again for the rest of my life. Yeah. Are we just about wrapped up here, do you think, or what? Do you have anything more to say?
No, I'm done.
Okay. Let me just track down the social accounts. While I'm doing that, Soren, what's the best thing that you cook, and be explicit with the recipe, please?
Okay. So I'm the type of guy who, in every aspect of my life, I do this thing called pushing it to the edge. And what that means...
Immediate nonsensical start. I love it. Go on.
Pushing it to the edge means... I'm really good at allocating work to other people or other things. So when I have an opportunity, when I have a job to do, I know, there's somebody who'd be better at that. I'll give it to them. And in this case, I give the job to my slow cooker.
Okay.
And did you think I was going to say my wife?
It was touch and go there. I'm still, I'm holding my breath that slow cooker isn't a nickname for someone you know.
It's an actual slow cooker.
Thank God.
Yeah. And here's the deal. I don't eat beef, and so I eat a lot of chicken. And chicken kind of sucks after a while. Like, you can grill it, and it's fine. You can cook it in the oven. It's all right. But if you can slow cook it and then shred it, you can make some really, really good chicken. And so I have a recipe for barbecue chicken that I do, mm-hmm. where I take chicken breasts, put them in the slow cooker, and add some salt and pepper. And then I take some Worcestershire sauce, some barbecue sauce, some brown sugar, some mustard. And I think that's it. I got my own ratio, but I mix that all together. And then I pour it over the chicken and it does the job for me. And then I take it out, I shred it up. Shredding is you gotta be in shape to shred.
Okay.
You gotta be shred to shred.
Yes, Mario Batali, bounce a quarter off that ass.
Well, then these guys aren't slow cooking, man. They're not doing it right. I want all those bits. I want them all about the equal size. And then you put it back in the sauce and that gives you a lot more surface area and it just gets all over that chicken. And then I take onion buns, cut them in half, put some coleslaw on top. And what I like to do with my coleslaw is I'll just get like a regular old fuck off Ralph's or whatever your grocery store is version that has a little packet in it. And then I mix in a little mayonnaise too. Get it, get it kind of creamy. And I also don't like how sweet that dressing is a lot. So I want a little savory. And then I take crispy onions, like French's crispy onions.
Yeah, yeah.
Put them on top of that. Put a pickle on it, coleslaw, the top on. And these things are messy. You gotta, this is not a thing you want other people watching you eat, but it's so delicious. And I barely had to do a thing.
Okay. You did save it at the end. I like your approach to it that feels pretty scientific. And you know what you want, and that comes through, and that's very good. You should know that the whole beginning sounded like a kid doing a book report for a book he definitely did not read. When you're like, here's the thing about me, I push things to the edge. Much like looking down, Charles Dickens did. And another thing you should know about me is that I didn't like beef, which reminds me, Oliver Twist, he wants beef. That's his main thing. That's the difference between me and Oliver Twist. Is a desire for beef.
He's wanted some more, sir. I think that's him.
In conclusion, give the kid his beef. Don't give it to me. Soren Bowie, A+, please.
I once did a report on a dream catcher, like the how a dream catcher works. You know, are you familiar with a dream catcher?
Like a Native American, but co-opted by white people, symbol of catching dreams, like a tennis racket looking deal that sits over your bed?
That's the one.
Okay.
I did a report at the front of my class about a dream catcher. Well, I had made one and didn't use a pack, like prepaid packages for those. And I just went to an arts and crafts store and made it. I can't remember what it was for. And then they're like, well, how does it work?
Catching dreams.
Yeah. But I mean, okay. Yes. Yes, Daniel. And so I had to describe how a dream catcher works and just did that. Just made it up as I went and talked a lot about other things that didn't belong there, like how you dye yarn and things like that. There's no yarn on it. And really just like threw it out my ass. And then at the end, I was like, I think that went really well. And afterwards, the teacher pulled me aside and was like, that was pretty offensive.
Oh, really? I was going to assume that you were good at it, and maybe we should save this for a whole other podcast, but like I excelled at pulling things out of my ass in middle and high school. Anytime the assignment didn't involve like handing in a hard copy of your work at all, when it was just like, for this thing you need to explain something to the rest of the class, I fucking zoomed. I would do no prep, and I would just like very confidently walk up to the front of the room and be like, today we're going to learn how to make a movie monster. Now, there are three essential components to making a movie monster. Who knows what they are? And kids would be like, lighting? Like, yes. And I'd write lighting on the board. And just like, just play this classroom like a fiddle. And always did well. It was always like an engaging 7 minutes of time wasting, which is, I imagine, what the teacher, like, that's what I'm getting the A for, is the teacher being like, yeah, I mean, everyone but you was quiet. and I got to look in the newspaper for other jobs. So yeah, you get an A. But I was like thrilled anytime they were like, extemporaneous speaking, just go and like and teach a lesson about something. I'm like, fucking great. I could do it tomorrow, whenever you want.
Yeah, that's
you want me to talk about the elements of drama or how to play bass? I'll do it.
That's like true power.
I'll just like get up and describe it.
It feels so good to just be able to wing things. And everyone around you be like, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
But I don't get that a lot in my life.
No, I was much more effective at it when I was dealing with children. Less so now when anyone asks me anything about anything.
Yeah.
But that's going to wrap up our show. You can follow Soren on Twitter at Soren_LTD. You can try to follow me on Twitter at DOB_INC. My tweets are protected now. Because I'm moving slowly towards not having a Twitter at all anymore, so I can spend less time in front of a computer. But until then, you can sort of follow me. You can email the show at qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com. You can find the show on Twitter at twitter.com/qq_sorenanddan. That's honestly the most effective way that you can reach me if you have any questions about the show. You can find and hire our producer, engineer, editor, Gabe at GabeHarder.com. If the site is not up, he assures us it will be up when the time is right. And we trust him on that. We also have a Patreon, and you can donate to that Patreon. All of that money, I think, goes to Gabe at this point. Soren and I have not seen a dime of money from this show. Yeah. So all of the money goes to Gabe, which is to say all of the money keeps the show going. So if you like the show, donate. If you like it but you don't have money or don't want to spend it on us, that's totally fine. Just tell your friends to listen to the show and download and like and subscribe.
Your rich friends.
Yeah, yeah. All those things. That's it. I think that's about it. That's got to be it, right?
No, that's good, Dan.
Okay. Yeah.
You winged it, and it was just wonderful.
That's great. Now, there are three essential components to subscribing to this show. Who in the audience, who knows what they are?
Having a telephone.
That's correct. Having a telephone. That's what we call them. People still say telephone, so you're correct, young man.
All right. Oxygen.
Okay. Yep, that goes on the board too.
All right.
And then the third one was, again, lighting.
Yeah, lighting. Very important in podcasts.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.